This is The Platform Rules, Digital Transformation for Product Companies, hosted by Propel.
When the product was king, it was all about what the product could do. Now that customer is king, it's about creating the best customer experience and gaining lifetime loyalty. On this special episode of The Platform Rules, we're bringing back an oldie but goodie from Propulsion, Propel's annual conference. Author, speaker, and advisor Jeffrey Moore joins Propel CEO Ray Hine to talk recurring revenue models, collaboration, and technology. This year's Propulsion is just weeks away. If you'd like to be there for more sessions like this, sign up now at propelplm.com/propulsion.
Welcome, Jeffrey, to Propulsion 21. Last year, we held our first event during COVID, and you were able to speak and be a keynote then. So thanks again for joining us today.
Well, it's a pleasure. I mean, Propulsion, let's do it.
Fantastic. You know, I think last year, I think the theme really was, boy, we had COVID. We had lots of things moving on with elections, a lot of global change, certainly, in not only work from home, with people also, you know, trying to figure out how we're going to deal with the new supply-demand issues and so forth. And so, you know, today, you know, I think we're going to talk a lot about different things in product evolution and, you know, the customer being first and so forth. Yeah. So, you know, last year, you and I chatted quite a bit about, you know, our category. We're in enterprise product lifecycle management.
Yeah.
It's a big old category, been around a long time.
You and I go way back, 20 years on this one.
We do, and you know, it's the fourth largest software category behind CRM and HRM and ERP, but really kind of one of the last to evolve. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about product evolution. Boy, the products are changing, but how we make products is also evolving and changing. And last year, you know, we talked about going from concept to customer. And since then, you know, you and I've chatted and we talked about customer-led growth and product-led growth, but it's really more customer to concept to customer. And this whole, you coined it, it's a virtuous cycle. So let me get your perspective of what you've seen maybe in the last 12 months. I know you talked to a lot of product companies and leaders and helped them drive innovation.
Well, so, you know, I mean, when you and I, when we started this game, product management was, it really was conceived as linear from ideation to delivery, and it was a line. And then you would start a new line. And I think the biggest change as we move to a subscription economy and to a more as-a-service world is it's a loop. It's no longer a line, it's a loop. And so that has a big impact on economics, because you used to capture all your economics with the sale and then with a kind of a locked-in license mode. Now we're in a subscription mode, so we have to continually re-earn the right to serve the customer. That's taking customer support from a kind of a tech support function to what people are now calling customer success management, because if they're not getting value, they probably won't throw us out, but they'll attrit and our economic model will not return. So there's a whole different set of incentives, and all of that is now coming back to say, well, who's now accountable? And the old style product manager said, well, it's not me, I ship my product. And then, well, who is? And so I think this is where product lifecycle management is really going through a sea change right now.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, I started off in product management and it was all about, you know, what features, you know, on that side and you know, what were you going to build in, whether it was a disk drive physical product or a backpack or software. And I think you're right. The biggest change that we've seen is that people become product owners, and the product managers need to think about not what the product is, but how much money, who's my market. They really have to be market managers at the end of the day and look at the revenue models.
I think, I actually think it's going to evolve. I actually think the product manager is now going to be a incubator, kind of a petri dish to grow general managers. Because basically we're now asking the product manager to act like a general manager, which means you're not just accountable for the technical performance of your product, you're accountable for the economic performance, which means you're accountable for the outcomes in your customer's environment. And if you, I mean, the old product manager was really an engineer.
Right.
And then the product marketing person was a communication specialist. And you kind of threw it over to the product marketing people and they extruded it into the world, right? Well, now it's like, no, you have to stay in the loop. And of course, we now have some technologies that let us do that. I mean, the phone home capability of everything is very, very exciting and people were installing that all over the place. A lot of those phone home things are, however, they're ending on an answering machine and nobody's looking at the tape.
Right.
So we got to close. I think a lot of organizations in this year and next year are going to say, we have to get a lot better about closing that loop.
Yeah, and I think, you know, certainly we see our types of customers with compressed innovation. You know, you got global competitors and, you know, the product side with products as a service. Let's chat a little bit about that and how that's really changed the model too. You know, prior life, I worked in a company that was in the CPQ space, and we talked about recurring revenue models or subscription or you know, kind of the revenue cloud, which is where people are thinking about, you know, now how to attain and retain customers. You had one-time usage-based and recurring revenue. Every hardware company on the planet, or like customers like ours, we have a company called Sunday, they make lawn care and subscription lawn care. How do you keep your lawn green throughout the year and so forth? You know, we're seeing those kinds of, to your point, it is about the recurring revenue model, you know, driving it for the long haul. So customer first on that side, it is about service as well. How do you think about the whole life cycle that includes not just the product managers, but sales, marketing, aftermarket, service?
The whole thing. So one of the things you mentioned early on, that you said, you know, global competition, this is actually going to take competition from global back to local. One of the things you cannot do in China is manage the loop in America. You just can't. And of course, with the extended supply chain, you put latency into your responsiveness. That's not good either. Now, we did it for when product was king, offshoring was the right play.
Right.
But if the customer's king, you want to redirect your energies closer to the customer. So again, so now you say, you're right. When I said the product manager is the general manager, I mean that they're really an orchestrator. It's not going to be, the world's not going to report to them, but they've got to orchestrate this, the whole, you know, all the way from the marketing lead gen, the deal development, the sale, the customer success enablement, the business value realization, and then back around again, right? So
right.
And so getting in touch with what the customers, you know, we used to think about product management as a what business, what is in the product. The product managers now have to think about why. Why is the product? And then how do I make the product serve the customer's why? And then, yes, I have a bill of materials for what. And most of my work at the end of the day is on what, but I can't do what in isolation from how and why.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And then the next piece is, how can I keep them forever as well, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing that's changed.
And you know what's interesting? Customers want to be kept forever. Mm-hmm. Basically, we were just blowing them off. I mean, and we were blowing them off to go to get the next customer because the economic model did not incent people to stay the extra course. It wasn't that people didn't want to. People have always wanted to serve their customers, but the license and maintenance model kind of locked in. You started taking the customer for granted, and then the customer kind of thought, oh, okay, you get this sort of passive-aggressive relationship with your install base. It's like, this is not good. So although this new model is forcing us to up our game, and by the way, a bunch of people are not succeeding with it yet, but I think it's forcing us to be our best selves.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm going to go back to you. You mentioned orchestration. And, you know, for me, I think about technology now helping to change things. And certainly last year with COVID, we learned how to work remotely from home. And how could you orchestrate getting work done, you know, remotely in that sense, right? You had people that weren't coming together in the office, sitting in a room, whiteboarding together, brainstorming, those kinds of things. So when I think about, you know, the technology shifts and the technology enablers that are going to help us for this next generation of workforce, the new way of work as well, having distributed supply chains, you talked about, you know, offshoring to nearshoring, all of that end. You know, I think the thing that we've seen as a big change and shift, and it's not happening as fast as I think it could at the technology level, you know, kind of the engagement layer. You have a stair step model. You love stair step models.
I do. I'm definitely into stairs.
But, you know, systems of record to systems of engagement to systems of analytics and then into intelligence. I think I have the stairs right. But we're still kind of between engagement and analytics kind of blended together on that side. But I think there needs to be an acceleration in that unstructured collaboration, the communication, and then the structured collaboration, which, you know, product development, product launch, successful market launches, it's a team sport.
It is a team
sport. So it forces communication, engagement, and orchestration.
You know, it's interesting, and you and I, you know, as you guys know, because you're on the Salesforce platform, I guess you had a great Dreamforce, by the way, this last week, or this week, I guess. No, last
This week.
This week. The time flies when you're having fun. But, you know, they just acquired Slack. And if you think about what that Slack was about trying to address exactly the problem you're talking about. Because we had we've had communication, electronic communication, for a long time. But it was organized around the directory. It was organized around, hey, Ray wants to talk to Jeff, Jeff wants to talk to Dario, whatever we're doing. Slack is organized around units of work. And it's a way of pulling people that don't even know each other together around a product launch, around a product, whatever it is. So that's one place where I think technology, I think in general, the technology, when we start with technology, the purpose was to automate, to take out cost.
Right.
Okay? Now I think it's much more to connect, to take out time. We're in a war against latency. We're trying to continually take time. And so, yes, we always had the ROI on dollars. I think we're going to have a new set of metrics on ROI and on time to response. We talk a little bit now about time to value. Time is going to be a big deal, and I think the technology is going to help us with time.
That's a great point. I think the thing that's unique and different with Slack, as a case in point, is, you know, we've had text messaging and, you know, lots of ways of communicating. But what Slack does, you know, is it brings it in context. So the threads are there, they're persistent, it's about a particular topic and that level of engagement. And certainly, you know, the way we embed it and how we see people using our technology, you mentioned the Salesforce platform. You know, we had many choices, Google platform, Azure, and the like, when we decided to start the company 6 years ago. And the reason we chose the Salesforce technology stack was, certainly it was the best cloud platform for the customer engagement side, you know, leading market leader there. They're now on the Dow 30, exploding and growing. So we've been a benefactor of the tailwinds of Salesforce's growth. But beyond that, it was a customer-driven platform. And we always knew we wanted to connect customer and product together on that side. Certainly they've, you know, acquired other technology areas that are helping us digitally transform businesses to the cloud. But as we see, you know, Salesforce evolving and then now Propel on top of Salesforce, it's really inseparable to take customer and product, the engagement in anybody that's manufacturing something, whether it's a backpack or a Traeger barbecue or, you know, Roku or Vizio TVs. You're right, that compression of innovation is going to continue to happen faster and faster, and you need a platform that will scale and be malleable. And I think that's what we haven't had in the last 20 years.
You guys are not giving yourselves enough credit. Look, anybody who started a PLM company 6 years ago would say, well, of course it attaches to the ERP. I mean, it never would have occurred to anybody that you would attach it to a CRM. And you guys made that choice. And of course, it's turned out to be completely prescient because, by the way, 20 years ago, the supply chain was the gating item, and that was the place to put PLM. But now it's no longer the gating item. Now is the customer relationship and the value realization that's the gating item. So when you did that, I mean, the first time I heard it, I thought, PLM and CRM, what are you doing? But it's like, it's absolutely the right thing to do. And of course, what it does, it means the product manager, you still have to have the engineering chops or the product creator, you know, you still have to be a product person, right? But it used to be when you were a product person, I go to work, I go to my building, I stay in my building, I work with my people, I'm in Jira or I'm in some product management system, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, Jeff. You need to be in tune with the end user. You need to be talking to your customer success managers. You need to be talking to the customers. You need to be looking at the logs. Those systems of engagement, the thing that's wonderful about them is they keep log files. So initially, we never looked at the log files. We waited for somebody to call and say it doesn't work.
Right.
And now what systems, and by the way, human beings looking at log files is a little bit like looking at wallpaper. So it's got to be a system of intelligence. We do need to have artificial intelligence and machine learning. But if we can detect those signals earlier, which is what this is all about these days, can you detect the problem before it happens? Can you detect the opportunity in time to capitalize on it? You know, that's all built into that it's got to be in the product architecture, because otherwise you're not going to get the signal in the first place. But then you also have to harvest the signal.
Right.
And so as you see, that's where that orchestration comes in, because the person who's harvesting the signal probably isn't the person who's managing the product.
No, makes total sense. I still think we're kind of around the early days of that aspect with, data lakes and insights and where people are trying to orchestrate, connected devices and the like. And, as we talk to our customers, again, I mentioned Traeger, Wi-Fi connected barbecues.
Do they really have Wi-Fi connected barbecues?
Absolutely.
So what are they doing with a Wi-Fi connected barbecue other than realizing I just burnt my steak?
you get recipes. It tells you when it's at temp, and it will actually control, the temp up and down.
Cool.
It's more like using an oven. You can get perfect food off of this, and they know what I cook.
Yeah.
And they start sending me recipes and help me, think about how to be a better chef.
Therefore, you're in love with them, and you're going to get to stay with them, and that's very cool.
Absolutely. Very cool. But the thing that I think it plays back to is its customer responsiveness and loyalty. And what we continue to see is that as the market evolves, and you talk about large data and you talk about insights and so forth, having the organizations and the teams, that it's not just about product management and the supply chain side. You're right, 20 years ago, we had outsourced manufacturing, a contract manufacturer explosion with now factories with hundreds of thousands of employees and the like. But the shift that I saw, and I think you're saying and seeing too, is that the compression is with this fast rate of change, salespeople, marketing people, our customer base to just continue to be pushed more and more options.
Yeah.
And how do you differentiate,
yeah,
on that side? So when you think about launching a product, we think of it, you have to create a product. That's the design and make aspect of it, the engineering, manufacturing, supply chain side. Then you commercialize it. How do you get it to marketing and sales?
Yeah.
And now you have omni-channel sales, either direct sales or you have people coming to your website and configuring a car, or configuring whatever they want, configuring your barbecue, and then you've got pure just e-commerce aspect where I'm just buying and I'm getting suggested, like typically Amazon or any other website. So you've got the commercialization, and then you've got the quality, the aftermarket service side. So the commercialization side is the area that was the aha moment. You mentioned PLM on Salesforce. It's a V8 moment for me. When you think about how people are going to succeed, maybe predictions for, maybe next year, 5 years, 10 years. I mean, you're a guy that likes to put models out
I do. And I think, to be fair, I like to divide the world of business up into what I call complex systems and volume operations, because they are different. In the complex system, that's typically a B2B deal, where basically the company is really buying outcomes from you. They're buying the product, but and if you don't understand the outcomes, and if you don't work on value realization with them end to end, and so that's a big human in the loop. You can't buy that on Amazon. That's people getting together. It's teams getting together. There's co-innovation. You keep going, and in that situation, what the PLM logs teach you is that's more of a Slack-like log, where it's a conversation, it's intellectual people thinking, should we do it this way, should we do it that way, let's try this, we co-innovate together going forward. And the volume ops play, where basically you are buying a product, you bought a barbecue grill, you didn't buy a relationship with Traeger, you bought something for your backyard. So that is a product thing. That's going to be more indirect, and then the issue is, how can you stay in touch in a very hands-off way? I mean, I don't want Amazon to know my personal desires, but I do like the fact that Amazon kind of gets what I'm doing. And so that we're right now, by the way, with social media, we're having some cultural issues around how do you maintain that social distance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not social distancing isn't just for COVID, it's for Amazon too, but or Facebook. But I think we're still mastering that art. But what you'd like to be able to do is say, look, from an impersonal set of signals that doesn't violate your privacy, we can begin to anticipate A, the success, the success of our product, but B, what recipes Ray might like. And so I think if we don't do that, if we just say, well, that's just too complicated, we'll just send the barbecue, but they're not gonna throw away the barbecue, But the economic model of any aftermarket participation, and by the way, if it's a renewal, if there's a consumable, or if you're going to, you know, buy a car, and after 5 years you're going to get the next lease, if you haven't been maintaining that cycle, you're going to get marginalized. You won't go out of business tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, but at the margin, you're going to be one of the ones that isn't going to be here. And the ones that are here are the ones I think are going to double down on systems of intelligence. First of all, they're going to get their systems of engagement good, because right now they're okay, but they're not great. Mm-hmm. You got to get your system of engagement good, but then you got to use your systems of intelligence to say, we got to get smarter and smarter about the signal. It's a little bit like getting married and it's your wife's birthday, and you think, what does my wife want for her birthday? And if you ask her, you've already lost. So it's like, get the signals, Jeffrey. So a little bit like that.
Well, you know, they say it was that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Managers are from Mars, customers, whatever.
I've been with my wife a long time. I don't know if I've got the signal right yet.
Well, no, believe me. I think there's something wrong with the male brain. Male pattern blindness, maybe. I don't know what it is.
You know, switching gears, just one other thing that came to mind. You know, with COVID, and, you know, we've always got this demand-supply issue of, you know, whether it's, appliances, whether it's cars, you know, whether it's chips in that side. And people are trying to ramp and start things back up. You know, one thing that I think we didn't chat about is the impact or the inseparability between, you know, developing, launching, and selling those products, but the quality of the products. So I'm an old engineer, did disk drives. We came up, you know, it was 100,000 hour MTBF, then we had to have 1,000,000 hour MTBF.
Yep.
Meantime between failure, people don't know that, but you know, so the quality had to go up because we were going into disk arrays and the like. But one of the things I fear from an engineering perspective or thinking about products is we have a disposable society. So the engineering domain of, you know, compressed innovation, if you're going to flip things out every 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, cars even, you know, on that side too. So how do you think about the inseparability of, you know, standalone quality versus product and market quality for that whole customer loyalty thread, that digital thread, if you will?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, there's an interesting thing that happened with quality even at the product level. So when we were building these meantime failures things, getting bigger and bigger, then the Google guys came around and said, no, you don't. Just have redundant disk drives. You know, and you think, actually, that was brilliant. But what they had to do is they had to do software that federated risk and federated quality so that you could receive quality without having to have every component have quality.
Exactly.
That was brilliant. That was brilliant. But the problem with that, and the issue that I think we all have now, is there's this planet Earth thing, because climate change, carbonization, waste. I mean, the problem with that model is, if you're not careful with that model, you become a disposable society, and we're very challenged on that. So I think part of the prediction for the next 10 years is you're going to see a lot more green engineering. You're going to see a lot more sort of ESG commitments. We've been kicking that can down the road for my entire life. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to kick it down the can.
ESG meaning?
Something sustainability and ESG. What the heck? It's the World Economic Forum goals for the environment. I've got some jargony I can't remember what it stands for. But the point being, sustainability is the middle one, though, for sure. And so I think you're going to see green as being a value prop. Mm. And whereas before, I think green has been a brand value prop, you know, like green cosmetics or green this. I think we're going to say, no, green earth, please.
Right.
And by the way, Salesforce is 1 trillion trees.
Right.
1 trillion trees?
Yeah.
That seems like a lot of trees. But it's Mark. And you gotta love him. I mean, it's like, okay, I don't know. And by the way, he would be the first to say, I have no idea how we're gonna do this.
Yeah.
But we gotta get it done.
That may be a great place to start to think about finishing up. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I'm excited about, because you and I are at the tail ends of this life cycle.
This gray stuff. I don't know what it's about.
And we talk about planet, and I'm a grandfather now.
I
do care about, you know, the earth and the planet and the like. And, you know, about a third to half of our customers are medical device companies.
Okay.
And the thing that I'm most proud of, when I start to think about, you know, we talk about product success.
Yeah.
And we talk about outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, one of our great new customers, Garden Health, you know, it's about thinking of cancer screening through blood for early detection and the like. And the ability to, you know, predict early on and look at data patterns and then look at how you can create specific chemotherapies and so forth. So I think the future is bright. You know, if we can continue to propel innovation with, you know, companies, whether you're making backpacks or swell water bottles or IoT connected coffee cups, you know, as well, and medical devices for sure. Yep. You know, I think we're going to wind up with a better planet, better products. I think the economy from that perspective has a good shot at recovery. We're seeing some interesting growth. Last year, you know, a number of our customers went public, companies like, you know, Vizio, Desktop Metal.
That's pretty cool.
Traeger did.
Isn't it exciting when your customer goes public?
It is.
Yes, yes.
Well, they're propelling their own innovation and ultimately propelling their businesses, you know, at the market level too. So I think the future's bright. And, you know, your insights over the last 20 plus years, our relationship, watching this evolution, I really appreciate that. And, you know, thank you for joining us again for Propulsion 21.
Well, and thank you for helping propel our world. Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Good deal.
Thank you for listening to the Platform Rules Digital Transformation for Product Companies. You can listen to this show and more at propelplm.com/podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share with a colleague, leave a review, or email us at podcast@propelplm.com with any feedback or questions. Until next time, Platform Rules.